Hi, everybody. My name is Kayla Felposh, and this is The Squad. We'll all introduce ourselves. And we're here mostly to talk about our experience with World Youth Day, a little bit of why we went, and what actually ended up happening on it. So I will hand it down to Corey Luna.
So I'm going to start The Squad, mostly because I don't want to brag, but this was my idea, slightly. But it originally started by me and Thomas's school, Central Michigan University. Our parish there was going to take a group of people, and the trip ended up falling through over the summer. And so me and Thomas were just, Thomas basically texted me and was like, "Hey, so are you still planning on going?" And I was like, "Maybe." So we decided, like, hey, we could actually do something about this and maybe figure out a way to go overseas. Pretty much striking fear into our parents that we wanted to do that. But and the original reason why I wanted to is just to experience the Universal Church in just a powerful way, because, I mean, here in Fowler, even at CMU, when I experienced the church, it's beautiful and it's amazing, but to see that our faith is not only here, not only in our small community, but also worldwide, I was really intrigued by that. And also there's the bonus of traveling and everything like that. So I was like, yes, count me in. So yeah, that was basically the reason I wanted to go. And the rest of our team will kind of introduce the reasons why they were kind of called onto this trip.
Hello, I'm Thomas Horak. So like Corey said in the beginning, we kind of got together and talked about going on this trip. My original, like, time I first wanted to go, CMU, like, they had brought it up at one of the talks, and it was like, hey, we're going to be doing this trip, sign up after the talk. So I just kind of made an impulse decision that I really wanted to go. It included going to the Czech Republic, which I really wanted to do. I'm Czech. And then seeing the Pope. So didn't really think about it too much. I signed up, and then from that, it kind of built up, and I kept wanting to go even after it fell through. So I talked to Corey about it, and then we kind of started going from there. But, I mean, I guess Universal Church stuff in there too, but really just to kind of get out to Europe and see Czech Republic and see the Pope too. So that was kind of where I was coming from.
Hi, as I said, I'm Kayla Felposh. I also signed up on impulse on this same trip that Corey and Thomas were talking about. And when it fell through, I was kind of like, yes, this is my way out, because I was not really sure if I wanted to do it or not. But over the course of up till that point, my first 3 years at CMU, just the experience of Catholicism on campus and the different challenges I experienced both as a Catholic amongst in a secular campus, and even the tensions and difficulties within my own parish there, left me feeling pretty worn out and questioning whether I wanted to go into ministry and how I really fit into this whole Catholicism thing. And so with some bullying from my dear friends and with a lot of personal reflection, I ended up deciding to go on this spur-of-the-moment trip after all.
Hi, I'm Connor. I originally heard about I've been informed about World Youth Day for a long time, and when I heard that they were planning on going, I did everything I could to be like, hey, I know this is a CMU trip, but can you slide me in there too? I can be one of you guys. And I've always wanted to travel, and I looked into studying abroad, but that always fell through. And like, when I heard that there was, a huge universal conference for Catholics to be able to go to, I was really excited, because I was kind of wanting to go to find God's calling for me. Like, I've been looking into missionary work for a long time, and I was going into it hoping that he would give me some kind of an answer for that. Obviously, the universal church reason I wanted to go, because it's different when you see it over media or through different articles, hearing about how the church is working in the world, but to actually be there and see the numbers, it's just not comprehensible, because it's just how many people, you hear the number and it just doesn't sound real. But it was life-changing in that way. And then just being able to see the country along with a group of people that I love was just probably one of the best reasons of going.
I'm Savannah. The reason why I went on this trip was because for a while now, for a couple months, I've been very desolate in my faith, and I kind of wanted that kickstart again. And so I went on this trip hoping for, like, this kind of, like, big experience that everyone talks about from different conferences. And so I was really looking forward to that. And along with Corey, like, I really wanted to experience the Universal Church and bring that back not only to Fowler but to my campus at Saginaw Valley. I really wanted to use my talents and bring it back to the campus that I love so much.
All right, so from here, we'll kind of outline some of the different places we went and the experiences that we had there. So we started out by flying into Prague, and this ended up being a lot more intimidating than I thought it would be because as soon as, oops, thank you, Norton likes to remind me that I'm irresponsible, but yeah. Anyway, I realized as soon as we got off the plane, even though I've studied abroad a couple times and done a lot of traveling, we did not know the language at all. And so trying to find the bus that was going to take us like into the city and everything, it was insane. But the Lord took good care of us, and we ended up at this hostel that was actually a pilgrim hostel, and it was right across from this beautiful church called St. Ludmila's, which is, Ludmila is a lovely name. I'll name my daughter that someday. I'm totally kidding. Okay. This is my sense of humor. I got it from my dad. So it was amazing just coming into here, and there were icons of the Holy Trinity in our room, which was a godsend, and it was just a really beautiful place to be. From the view that we had, you can see we're eating breakfast on the balcony here. It was very pretentious. You wouldn't think we were staying somewhere for $14 a night. Was it that? I think something like that. Exactly. So that was really cool to get to stay there, and we basically took our day and a half in Prague to hit up the main sites to see. So we went to the St. Charles Bridge and Prague Castle and the Infant of Prague. So what are you laughing at?
I'm just looking at Savannah.
Oh, in the corner of this picture here, you can see Savannah on a Segway, which she was roped into doing, and then she proceeded to go around the main square. It was terrifying. Yeah, she did. She gave a marriage proposal. It was really fun. So the church in the background where you see Savannah on the Segway is called Our Lady Before 10, so I'll hand over the mic to have Savannah talk about that.
Okay, Our Lady Before 10, Our Lady Before 10. I was very, like, intrigued by this picture, or, like, by the church in general, because, like, it just looks so, like, I feel like not a lot of churches look like this because it's so dark and, like, gothic. But, like, I don't know. I just thought it was so beautiful. I was, like, captivated as soon as I saw it. And one night we went inside just to, like, hang out, just to pray for a little bit. And it was a very great time to just relax and just kind of calm ourselves and pray. And while we were praying, it was very beautiful because there was, like, I don't want to say, like, a high school group, maybe. Like, a high school group choir was there just practicing, but their voices were beautiful, and it was so cool to be, like, on one side of the church praying while the other side of the church is singing in the background, so it was beautiful.
Awesome. Let me see what's next for pictures. This is Prague Castle, so this was one of the main sites we got to see. There's not actually much of a castle there. The main attraction is the cathedral. And this is just it was St. Vitus Cathedral. And it's one of those churches you walk into and you just get shivers right away because the ceilings are so high and the stained glass is so beautiful. And as you can see from the picture there, there were tons of people in it. So it's not like you could just sit around and pray. But it was just really cool to think about the fact that people had been worshiping there for hundreds upon hundreds of years. And just really impactful to see, especially because the Czech Republic is such an atheistic country now, to think about the history of what it must have been like for them to go through all the political upheaval and everything, and just those remnants of Catholicism still there. And something cool that we got to do while we were there was to see these little side chapels that are in a lot of European churches, and one of them was the Chapel of St. Wenceslaus, which ties into what Thomas is going to talk about.
So a while ago, like nothing to do with the trip, my grandma gave me this really old book. It's called The 100 Saints. And it's like this really old, beat up looking book, but it was made in like early 1900 or something like that. And it just has like random saint stories in it. So I brought it with me because I knew that there were some Czech saints in there. So different times we just kind of take a break, sit down, like, right there, and read a saint story. So right there, we're in the St. Vitus Cathedral in that St. Wenceslaus Chapel, right in front of St. Wenceslaus's remains, and we're reading about St. Wenceslaus there. So that was really cool. He's one of the Czech heroes. He was a king. He had a terrible mom. And that St. Ludmila, that church that we were at, St. Ludmila is his grandma. So, like, his tyrant mom was ruling, and then he had a tyrant brother, and it was kind of weird how they were splitting up power between them, but eventually, like, Wenceslaus got the throne and, like, just did a ton of good stuff, and, like, he was killed by his brother. He was always, like, defending the Christians and whatnot. Then he was killed, so, by his brother. So he's one of the Czech heroes. There's a ton of miracles that have been reported, like, in that chapel. So it was cool to read about him. Another saint we read about, another one of the Czech heroes, is St. John Nepomucene, who's the first martyr of the Seal of Confessional. So back in the day, he was the king's personal confessor, and so also the queen. And so the king was getting suspicious of the queen and told John Nepomucene, you better tell me what she's confessing, or else you're going to die. So he wouldn't tell her, or wouldn't tell him. He got tortured a couple different times. Always kept the seal, and then eventually he was thrown into the river. It's like the Vltava River or something. It's whatever the Charles Bridge goes over. So St. John Nepomucene was thrown in the river and died, and when he was thrown in, like, his body floated up to the surface and floated down the river with, I can't remember how many gold orbs around his head, 12 gold orbs around his head, and, like, all the people saw it. And his tongue is incorrupt because he did not break the seal. So it was just cool to read about different saints. Like, we saw the river that he was thrown into. We saw his St. Wenceslaus' remains right there. Super old, but still, like, powerful today. Like, on the Charles Bridge, there was a little, like, I don't even know, a little mural thing for St. John Nepomucene. And you, like, put locks on it. Because he didn't break the seal. He was locked up. So that was really cool. We read about St. John Nepomucene Newman, who's, like, the Newman Center's now, like, people know him as an American saint, I guess, because he was born in Czech Republic. They didn't have enough room for priests. They had too many, so he came over to America to become a priest. And then that's where you have all the Newman stuff today. And then we read about some Polish ones. This was done before, like Faustina and Maximilian Kolbe had, like, all their stuff done, because it's a really old book. So we read more about the old Polish saints, like, who were they? There was another, like, Stanislaus in there. Stanislaus. Two Stanislauses. But so it was really cool being able to read about the saints, like, right where they died, right where they lived, right where they are now. So, yeah, the 100 Saints book.
Another amazing church that we got to visit was where the Infant of Prague was. And I know we kind of read about it a little bit, just to something that we really made a big priority on while we were in the Czech Republic and in Poland, is diving into the history and diving into, like, the background, a lot of the places that we were seeing, so we could really just kind of take to heart, like, the magnitude of where we were at and what these places meant to so many different people. So when we read about the Infant of Prague, the backstory was basically that the Infant of Prague was, I think, a gift that was given to a duchess that was in the Czech Republic. And once there was, all the wars that came through there, and once it was pillaged and stuff, the Infant of Prague was lost. And a monk had recovered the Infant of Prague amongst rubble and stuff, and it had actually lost its arms. So this is kind of funny, but it had lost its arms, and so the monk had, like, prayed before it and was like, what are you calling me to do? What do you want? And he felt like the baby Jesus was telling him, give me my arms and I will give you my love. And so basically it was like, all right, literal, got it. And so he made like the baby Jesus's arms again and reattached it. And now it's as you see it, like fully recovered and stuff. But so we kind of just had a laugh beforehand and was like, oh, so this is the place we're going. Okay. So so once we had gotten to this place and kind of sat before, we went to Mass there and was able to dive into Mass and the check. And I know something that was like, once we were praying in front of the infant of Prague, something that really started hitting me is like this childlike faith and how important it is. Something that all of us had kind of started to take on this trip is different virtues like that we could just kind of grow in, like faith or charity or hope, any kind of thing like that. And I know something that I had really picked out is faith and just being able to like have a very strong virtue of faith and just trust and believe in the Lord in any point in my life, whether it's hard or easy. And so so when I had dove into like childlike faith and what that really meant, I had just like really felt like the Lord, like God the Father was just calling to me and saying, like, I'm here with you. You can like have this sort of faith. And so at that point, like I know there was like a prayer there that they had in front of it, and I wish we had it up there. I totally forgot to give it to you. But it was just like praying this prayer of faith. It really kind of brought home to like why we're here and what kind of things that I wanted to get from this trip. So it was beautiful for me. And I know like the rest of us were like, did you read that prayer? It was like, yeah. I think all of us were like crying. Maybe not Thomas, but the rest of us were crying over it, but bawling. But it was just a beautiful place. And all of us, like, I think these sort of places is when where we were at and what we were doing started to become real. And like, this was a pilgrimage that we can like start really building virtue, really like diving in and giving things to the Lord. So.
And you recognize the infant of Prague from our church. It's on the left. And there are a lot of creepy infant baby Jesuses of Prague. I think ours is okay. But in case you're wondering, where have I seen that before? That's where it was. So next we went on to this lovely little village called Kutnohora. And we went there to see this really creepy old church called the Sedlak Ossuary. But first we started at this beautiful one. Basically a group of Cistercian monks lived there. And they were decimated during some sort of war. And all of their bones were left over in basically this mass grave. So this is their old church that has been refurbished, basically. We got to kind of climb around the rafters of it, which was cool. So we started there, and they had some relics of the saints there, and the difference between the European countries and the way we approach relics is very apparent by the picture there, because he's just chilling out, his skeleton's all dressed up in some nice bones and everything. But it was very interesting and eerie to see the historical kind of differences there, but also really powerful because you get to venerate the relics of a saint in such a real way. It got a little bit more real shortly.
This place is called the Sedlak Ossuary. Like Kayla said, like they had there's a Cistercian monastery monks there, and I think like from the plagues and then wars, they just had a ton, like they were running out of burial room. So this half-blind Cistercian monk, genius of a guy, he like somehow came up with the idea to make a church out of bones. I'm hoping it was like half-blind, thought it was a brick or something, said, hey, we got a ton of bricks, let's go with this. And then just didn't say anything after he realized it, but nope. So he kept going, and like that's just all people's bones kind of in different like displays. They had this huge chandelier that was being refurbished, so we weren't able to see that. But it was interesting. Yeah, it was like I felt a little uncomfortable the whole time. Like, I thought, like, growing up, like, seeing the Czech Republic, I always wanted to go to the Czech Republic. I knew of this place. I'm like, oh, man, I want to go here so bad. Going there, a little different. But it was still cool. Got to meet some cool people around there. There's a little Czech tackle shop on the corner of the street that I went into on the way back from that place. So if nothing else, got to do that, hit that up. But no, this was really cool. We got to sit down there for a little bit. It was like the whole time was a little eerie, I thought, but the church back in the day, it was something.
All right, so obviously it said we missed the train. But our way back, so the Sedlak Ostuary was a day trip that we're taking between Prague and where Thomas's family lived. And so we stopped there, and we had quite a complicated train route to take back. So we had waited a couple hours and gotten on the right train, and then we had gotten to the other place. Well, on our train ride back, it was about 10 minutes late, and we needed those 10 minutes to get on our other train. So literally, while we were on this train and, pulling up to the station, all of us are at the door and, waiting at the door, ready to run. And I'm not going to lie, this is the fastest I've ever run in my life. Savannah's on the track team, and somehow I out-sprinted her. I don't know how it happened. And even, Thomas and Adam had, they were behind me going, oh, crap. So, yeah, exactly. Backpack and everything. All of us are carrying, the load of stuff that we have for our trip on our back. So we all were running with our backpacks and stuff. And literally as we were running up the stairs, which is when I slowed down, that was a little bit more difficult. But as we're running up the stairs, the train that we need is pulling out of the station. And so, I mean, I think when we got up there, yeah, we were touching it, and as I think the guy that was driving the train ran, yelled out the window, "Sorry," because we were very obviously making a scene. So I threw down my backpack. It'd been a day, okay, and so I'm not proud of it. Remember the virtue of faith that I was building before? It came around, but so all of us had just been what do we do? And lo and behold, there was this short little plump Italian man who had followed us over there because obviously we looked ridiculous. And Kayla and Adam are quickly recovering from this and what can we do? So they're talking to this Italian man named Vladimir, right? Vladimir. Which is just the perfect name for him. So he's looking up on his phone different train schedules, and we're we need to go from here to this point and different things like that. And he just looks at his phone and he's laughing and he's like, "Haha, it is impossible." So of course we're like, "Oh, good. Thanks, Vlad. You're really helping us out." And so at that point, he's just like, "Oh, wait, you can do this and go to a town that's 10 miles away from it." I think it was. And so we're like, "All right, this is our best option." So we hop on another train that is supposed to get us somewhat near where Thomas's relatives are. And on our way, since Thomas's aunt and uncle, Helena and Franta, don't really speak very good English, then talking on the phone with them, they actually did speak really good English, but at the time we didn't really know the level. And so we were like, is it really worth it to call on the phone? And so Thomas called his cousin on the phone, and we had figured something out to where Helena and Franta were going to pick us up from this train station. And bless their hearts, because at the time we got there at 11 p.m. and we had been traveling since I think 10 a.m. that morning, right? So it had been a full day, and we were just tired, and we were like, okay, what's going to go on? But they picked us up, and we went home with them, and it was a beautiful time. But it was definitely a test in trust and faith in the Lord, so good times.
So, yes, we were able to stay with some of my family that's back in the Czech Republic. They're kind of distant, but there's Franta and Helena. You see Franta in the blue shirt and Helena, his wife, next to him. And then they had a son, Camille. So, before we went on the trip, I was in contact with Camille, kind of trying to get things figured out. And he was the person I called when, after Vladimir, trying to get things figured out with him. And he kind of was able to relay things really, really nicely back and forth. But so where they're at, it's a little town called Strażnica. We just call it Strażnica the whole time because we didn't know how to say it. But it's in the southern part of the Czech Republic, pretty close to the border with Slovakia. So it was quite a ways from Prague, so that was why it took so long to get there. But we got to that town, I can't remember what it was called, like Staré Město, the town next to it, where they came and picked us up, Veseli. So thankfully they were able to come pick us up. They drove us to their house and then poured us some shots of Slivovica, welcome drinks right away, and then we went to sleep after it. But so that we stayed in, yeah, so there's the house we stayed in. Franta and Helena live in a different house kind of on the other side of town. And this is Helena is the one, like I'm related through Helena. And this was the house she grew up in. And so it was the house that my great-grandpa grew up in before he came over. So it was really cool to hang around that and sleep in the house that he slept in and go to the church where he went to. But so with Franta and Helena, they were like way back when we were trying to plan this out, I asked Camille, like, is there any way we could stay with you or your parents at all? And you're just like, yeah, you're welcome to, like, didn't even ask him, responded like 2 minutes after and said, yeah, you're welcome to stay with my parents anytime, no matter how many people, like, you're welcome. So like, okay, we kind of went with that and just set things up. But like it was, the hospitality they showed was really, really cool. They gave us the house and just kind of left us for a little while, and they'd like come back with an itinerary of the day, and then we'd kind of go through it. And they just took us to a couple parks, a little place in Strażnica to get a tour, show us some churches around, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later. But they always fed us. We went over to their house a couple times. We swam in their pool with them for a while, and it was some good food. But they showed us a lot of hospitality, a lot of wine. We couldn't hang with them, but it was still a good time over there. But yeah, it's a really good hospitality. I was really, really glad I was able to see them. And they spoke such good English. I didn't think they spoke the best English. They were here a few months ago, like beginning of the year. I swear they must practice English or something, because it got so much better when they were here, because it was like we had no problem talking with them really. But yeah, so it was really cool to stay with them and hang around this little town in Czech Republic. We went from Prague, which is the huge city there, to this little town that's kind of in the middle of nowhere, just a bunch of fields around it, vineyards. So, yeah, like, just getting back to kind of the country style or however you want to think of it. It was cool, yeah. It was a lot more comfortable out there. But, yeah.
Yeah, one of the places they brought us was a museum, and it had a bunch of Czech instruments in it, so that's a picture of me getting excited over an old organ. Music minister, everyone. But let me see what the next thing was. Oh, yeah, so these are more pictures of us. They made dinner for us, and Thomas and Corey in their Central Catholic shirts. But one thing that we tried to do while we were there was to take time to pray together as a group. And so at night when Franta and Helena left us, the whole house, because they were cool like that, we'd all just gather together, and Thomas brought a book of Ignatian meditation, which is just basically a way to pray with scripture by visualizing yourself in the story. And that was something that was really powerful for me. Usually I kind of struggle with putting myself in, but for whatever reason that night, as we were praying through it, I don't even remember what the whole story was, but the basic, like the first couple lines of it were that Jesus was going somewhere and the crowds were pressing in on him. I don't know what happened next, but as I was praying with it, I was just really caught up in thinking, like, I'm feeling like someone who is in that crowd, just wanting desperately to touch Jesus. And I felt so desperate as I was praying, and I was kind of taking some time to reflect on that desperation and realizing how badly I wanted some answers from the Lord, because I felt like I'd been through so much, and I had so many questions. As I told you, like, I had a lot of questions going into World Youth Day, and that was the reason I went. And I just spent so much time analyzing my own life and thinking, like, what can I do differently? What can I do better? I'm a very anxious person, and so I question everything that I do. And in that moment of just praying and feeling like pressing in on the Lord, he just told me, hey, you're fine the way you are. And I was like, what? Because that can't be possible. I can always do something better. Perfectionist. And the Lord just slowly brought me into this understanding that for once I could actually be where he wanted me to be, that I'd made some of the choices that he wanted me to make, that it was all right for me to take this job at MHT as a music minister, to be in the relationship that I was in and all of these different things. And it just brought me a lot of peace, especially for the next few days, just knowing that I could settle down, I could stop worrying about what I was doing right and what I wasn't, and just take that time to just be with the Lord. So in the couple of times that we got to spend in Ignatian prayer, that was something that was really powerful for me. Moving on, something that Franta and Helena also did was to bring us to this huge church called Velurad, which was also, I think, an old monastery. Cistercian as well. Lots of Cistercians in the Czech Republic. But something that was really cool was that there was a holy door there. And you can see the Year of Mercy logo on that, and we saw a lot of holy doors while we were over. But we got the opportunity to go through that holy door and to pray together, which was really cool because all of us had been to confession the day before we left, and we got to go to Mass in this little town. So that was something that was really cool, was to go through a holy door in Europe. So there's a picture of us outside of this church with Helena and Franta, minus Thomas, which makes sense because it's his family. But that was something that was really cool that we were able to do together as a group. Let's see, who's next? Oh, and on to Savannah.
Okay, when we got to Częstochowa, we finally were able to have Mass in English because this whole entire time we were having Mass in a foreign language. We had no clue what was going on. So we got to Częstochowa, and is that us? Is that the church that we had Mass in?
Yeah,
so that's us before Mass, probably just like getting ready. And it was very cool because like for me and Connor, like we also had people going to World Youth Day from Saginaw. And so I was just sitting there getting ready for Mass, just like calming myself and stuff. And the priests come out and I'm like, oh, that like this is cool. There's a lot of priests there that, you know, whatever. Well, all of a sudden I saw one of our priests from Saginaw come out and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's Father Andy. Like, what the heck? And so I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. And so he just like comes over and sits down, and then another priest comes out and I'm like, that's Father Andy. Both of the priest names are Father Andy. So I'm like, there's Father Andy, and then the other Father Andy comes out right after. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this cannot be happening. And we knew that they were going to be there, but we had no idea if we were even going to see them, when we were going to see them, all this stuff. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, super excited we had Mass in English, and then, like, we get to celebrate Mass with two of our priests that we love so much from back at school. And I'm like, this is awesome. So we are celebrating Mass, and like after Mass, one of the central friends, Mary Stassa, we actually saw her there too, and we're like, oh, can you like take us to see Father Andy's? And she's like, yeah, no problem, like come with us. And so she took Connor and I over to see Father Andy's. It's weird to say that. And so Connor and I had split off from the rest of everyone else. And so everyone else went up front to go pray in front of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and Connor and I went to go talk to Father Andy's. And so I was, like, talking to Connor. I'm like, oh, boy, this could get bad. Like, there's tons of people here. I don't know when we're going to be reunited with the rest of our group. Like, it could be hours before we find each other again. Who knows? And so Connor and I are like, okay, well, everything will work out. It'll be just fine. So Connor and I were like, okay, well, we want to go see Our Lady of Częstochowa. We want to go pray in front of her. And so we're like walking over to get to Our Lady of Częstochowa, and there's like this super long line. And so we like get in line and we're just waiting there. And this cute little old man, like worker guy, like we were like standing there, and he would like make eye contact, and like I'm like, like, he just, like, kept looking over at me. I'm like, ah. And he didn't speak barely any English, but he's like, is this your first time in Poland? Like, that's what I got from him. I'm like, yeah, this is my first time. And so he's like, come with me. And we're like, oh, boy, this could be bad. Like, this strange old man, I don't know where he's going to take us. So he took us, basically, like, a shortcut up. So, like, at Our Lady of Częstochowa, there's like, it's kind of like gated off. There's like, how do I even word this? Like, there's like bars where like the front portion fits like, I don't know, 100 people, if that. And then the rest of it is just like a bunch of different pews, like in back. So he took us like a shortcut way. And he took us in front, like right in front of Our Lady of Częstochowa. And Connor, me and Connor are like, oh my goodness, this is nuts. So like Connor and I are just like praying a little bit. And we're like, this is so cool, like just taking it all in. And all of a sudden I look over. Corey's literally like 2 people away from me. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, how did this happen? Just this cute little old man, like in the form of Jesus, just taking us over and like bringing us back to our group was like, it was just so perfect. A little creepy, but it worked out just fine. So, yeah.
Oh, and something I forgot to explain before we went into this is Częstochowa is in Poland. So we made it across the border from the Czech Republic into Poland, and it was one of the main pilgrimage sites. So I'll show you next an image there. On your left, there's that image of Mary and the baby Jesus. And there's a lot of legend surrounding this image. It could date from back to like the 4th century or to 1500. No one knows. It's somewhere in there. But basically, Poland has a very huge devotion to this image of Our Lady. There have been multiple accounts of it being like people trying to destroy it in battle, and she's just invincible. There are a couple of slash marks across her cheeks from when some angry soldiers tried to destroy her, and any attempts to restore her by painting or anything have not worked. So it's just perpetual scars on Our Lady's cheeks. And her skin is also darker, mostly because she spent a lot of time in front of candles. And it survived a fire as well. So she's affectionately known as the Black Madonna because her skin is so much darker from the flames. Poland just has this huge devotion to her, especially around the time of Pope John Paul II when Poland went through World War II and then a communist regime, and both of those regimes tried to really suppress devotion to Catholicism, and Poland was just basically like, no. And so even on the days, on any like her feast day, there'd just be huge crowds of people in the street despite the Nazis or the communists or whatever that was. So this is a long-standing devotion, and we were really excited to go see it because of Pope John Paul II's, there's a lot of names there, and his devotion to her and just the huge history of it. And yeah, Our Lady was just watching over us that day because Savannah had her thing, and then as she described it, it'd be like an MHT if there was a gate separating the altar, the high altar, and the rest of it. That's kind of what this was like. So this image here was in front of the gates, and so we were kind of getting squished in trying to get up close to Our Lady. And as we're getting closer to the gates, Corey was like, Kayla, is that Marianne? And Marianne was my group leader for lead when I was a sophomore in high school. And I just had a really, I formed a really close relationship with her over the course of that, especially during that time I was going through a lot of insecurity, struggles with depression and different things like that. And her counsel and her friendship to me during that time really impacted my experience. And I was just kind of like, no way, that can't be her. But I'm like, I recognize those ponytails and those are earrings Marianne would wear because I've seen her a few times since then. And so I kind of worm my way through the crowd. Luna's like, just go. And so I'm worming my way through and I get up to her and I tap her on the shoulder and she turns around and she kind of gives me a look. And I'm like, it's Kayla from lead. And she's like, oh my gosh. And so we had a really big moment. I was kind of crying because it's like, I'm in front of Our Lady of Częstochowa and it's my group leader. And it was just insane. But it was just a huge day of joy because I had that relationship with her and Mary just brought us together again in that moment. And I don't know, it's just, I spent all day being like, what are the chances? There are millions of people in Częstochowa, millions of people flooding into Poland, and the fact that I would be 5 feet away from her on a day like this was absolutely insane. So that was just one of those high moments of joy for me, I guess, on that trip. Let's see. All right. I'll hand it on to, do we have more images here? No, I'll have to leave it on that. So next, Thomas and Savannah are going to talk a little bit about Marian consecration. Or is that, sorry, that should have been Thomas and Luna. Here you go.
Thank you. So when we were kind of planning this trip, I knew that, like I kept telling Corey, like, I don't care what we do in Poland as long as we go to Częstochowa, because I want to go there so bad. We were able to go and, like, just things worked out where I looked up the feast day of Our Lady of Częstochowa. It's August 26th, like just the other month. And it just so happened that was about 33 days after we were there. So I knew that there was that Marian devotion, 33 days of morning glory, like that a lot of people did here, I think. And so it worked out where, like, the very first day we were there, walked up casually, knelt down in front of Our Lady of Częstochowa, opened that book, and started the first day. And then just kept going each day, like, the group did it together. And then, like, the last day was on the vigil, and then the consecration day was on the 26th, the feast of Our Lady of Częstochowa. So just another one of those things where it worked out. You want to add more to that?
Just to clarify what exactly this is, I know, like, this has happened at the parish, but just to give a little foresight, the 33 days is just basically a consecration of, like, devoting yourself to Mary, to Jesus through Mary. So Mary can always, she's Jesus's mom, and she knows Jesus so much better than we do. And so she, like the mother that she is, can bring us closer to her son. And so this was something that I had already made my consecration, but we were like, this would be so cool to be able to just renew our consecration. Connor and Savannah were already going through theirs, so they kind of, like, they did theirs along with us, but they were just at different points. But we were all like, this would be amazing just to be able to, like, be somewhere that Our Lady is so present and so working in people's lives. Like, the devotion of Poland to this, to Our Lady of Częstochowa was so great, and I don't know about everybody else, but it inspired me just to, like, give myself to her again, and, like, just in a greater way, and it was so cool. Like, Thomas was like, we gotta do this, and, like, the way that it lined up, it was like, okay, this is a godsend, like, we have to do this, so yeah, it was just beautiful that we got to do this in front of Our Lady. And there was different times in the monastery where, like, there was open times to pray in front of Our Lady, and there wasn't, like, and just be there. And so I think it was in the morning before Mass, me and, like, Thomas and Adam, before we left to Krakow, we got up, like, what was it, like 5 or 6 a.m.? It was rough, but we got up super early just so we could, like, there was, like, an unveiling in the morning. So, like, every morning and every night they, like, cover Our Lady with, what is it, just a shroud or something? Yeah, so we just, like, wanted to be there. It was actually really cool because they made, like, a super big deal out of it. Like, they had trumpets and everything there, and there was, like, a crowd of people, and just, like, announcing Our Lady's, like, presence there. So we were like, whoa, this is a bigger deal than we thought. But so we went there, like, butt crack of dawn, and, like, heard trumpets, almost fell asleep, Polish Mass, and before we left Częstochowa. So it was definitely well worth it, and just a beautiful way to devote ourselves. But there was one other thing that we experienced there that was really cool. The one night that we were there, there is an evening prayer session, and, like, there's a crowd of people there. Like, it was packed. But one of our friends that had joined us there, Audrey and Katie, they knew a seminarian who was just, like, running the whole monastery, I guess. And we're like, oh, so you have connections. And so she was, like, texting him, was like, hey, can you get us in on this? So, like before the gate part of this whole monastery, they let us in where only, like, religious and priests were in, and then there was, like, us, and I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. So we ended up praying the rosary, and, like there were just different people that were starting to say the Hail Marys and stuff, and so we were hearing, like, Hail Marys and Our Fathers in different languages, like, back and forth. So it was really, like, I kind of want them to call on me, but then I kind of don't either. So it was just, again, a very cool experience of the Universal Church and hearing the rosary in front of Our Lady of Częstochowa, like, in a ton of different languages. Is like, I don't know what they're saying, but it sounds good. That was very exciting, and we kind of felt special because we were, like, in the VIP section. But Yeah, so we had so many blessings when we were there, and it was like the Lord was really just preparing us and kind of cradling us for World Youth Day. So it was a good time.
And who's next?
Oh. Okay, so at this point, we had traveled from Częstochowa to Krakow. So we had taken a train right into Krakow, and we really didn't know what we were in store for because, again, we were flying by the seat of our pants. So we got into the Krakow train station and had to figure out how to get a bus from that train station to Mogilany, which is where we were staying, the small town like 10 miles outside of, it was around there, 10 miles outside of Krakow. And it was like a teeny tiny town that our host families would be at. So that was basically what Monday's expedition was going to be, is finding our host families and getting settled. So we finally found a bus. It was very confusing, mostly because we were like being like taken back and forth, whether we should take a bus, whether we should take a tram or anything like that. So we were still trying to figure out the transportation of the city. And so it took us a pretty good amount of time to figure out how to get there. And when we finally did, we arrived in Mogilany. And if you look in back of us, like these are our cute little high school guides that were there to entertain us while we were waiting for our host families. So they were like teaching us games. And I think at first, because there was only a couple of them that really spoke English. So at first we were kind of just like, hey, and after a while, we kind of started learning how to communicate with each other and how to, like, they were, like, showing us games, and we showed them, like, one game, I think. Like, Ninja, didn't we show them Ninja? That was fun. But, so they were just super smiley, like, really great, really welcoming, and so once all of our host families started to become ready for us, they started transporting us to different households. So we were separated into three different households. Me, Kayla, and Savannah were in one. Thomas and Adam were in another host family's house. And then Connor and our other two friends, Katie and Audrey, were in a third. So at first I was a little freaked out because I was like, my little group and family are being separated. So what's going to go on? So again, it was like that aspect of being like, Lord, like I'm handing over trust here because I have no control over this and I have no idea what's going to happen. And so me and Kayla and Savannah were the last ones to be picked up. And we were transported from car, with cars or whatever. I'm sorry, they're by car. Language. So by car to our host family's house, which we stayed with an old couple. They were super, like, so welcoming, so hospitable. Their names were I'm Donna and Jan. Well, I always say Don and Jana, and it just doesn't sound right. So Donna and Jan. And at first when we got there, we were very confused because they did not really speak any English. And so me and Kayla and Savannah, like, she showed us to, like, the place that we would be staying. And she was, like, trying to communicate with us. And all we were, like, doing is giving her blank stares, like, I don't know what you're saying. And so it was very difficult. And at like this point in the day, we had been traveling for a while, and me and Kayla were like, I just don't know how to talk to her. And we were like trying to get like Google Translate to work on our phones. And like, it was just, yeah, like with zero data. And so we were like, okay, how can we be creative here? But Donna was ahead of us. And so Donna had ended up calling her sister-in-law, yeah, Bogna, who had lived in the United States, yeah, Bogna, you heard me right, but they had her and her husband had lived in the United States for 30 years, like, in Chicago, so their English was very good. So, like, Donna, like, just handed me the phone, because I guess I looked like the group leader. I was like, okay, so she handed me a phone, and I was like, hello? Like, not knowing what was on the other side. And Bogna had just started to say, hello, like, what is your name? And I was like, English. So this is great. So once she kind of started saying, like, oh, this is what Donna's trying to say, and this is, like, what would you like to eat, and different things like that. So we were like, oh, this is great. Like, finally. So after that, Donna had actually, like, cooked up a meal and, like, had served it to us. And we're like, this is prime. Like, thank you, Donna. And she was just such a sweet woman. Bogna had actually ended up coming over that night, and like her and her husband, we had like wine with her and her husband, and then Donna and Jan. and we had like somehow like started to communicate, like we had told like kind of where we were at in life, and they had told a little bit more about that. Do you want to talk about like their son and stuff? Yeah. They just had a great story, so I just want, like, Kayla to share this.
Okay. I'm sorry, we have so many little stories for you, and I'm going to try not to make this too long. Yeah, that's why I was... Sorry, Luna. So the couple that we were staying with, they had a son who had gotten this really strange... it was a nervous system disease, and it completely paralyzed him for a really long time. And so... But he was slowly starting to recover his motion, and he had this masseuse who was blind. And so the paralyzed man and the blind masseuse end up together, which is kind of cool. Yeah, they ended up together. It was really cute. But they prayed a lot while he was recovering for the intercession of Pope John Paul II. And he eventually recovered almost all of his movement. And so when the two got married, they named their son Carol after him, after Carol Wojtyla, which was Pope John Paul II's original name. So that was really cute. yeah, let's see. So if the rest of you just want to share a little bit about your host families, then we'll move on.
So me and Adam's the other guy that came with us. He's second on the left there. He's my roommate up at school. So he came with us. We were together in our little host family, kind of out a couple miles out of the town, dirt road, pretty secluded. We had Wi-Fi, so we could use Google Translate, though. It was really cool out there. There was, like, the mom, dad, and then two boys, I think, like, 17 and 15, or 15 and 13, something like that. The oldest one spoke English pretty all right. So we could communicate with him and stuff. And the dad was a firefighter in Krakow. So he was talking about how bumped up the department was for World Youth Day and the extra security. And he was working like 24 on, 24 off, I think. Like the last day, he was gone for like 3 days in a row. Like the last time we saw him was like 2 days before we left, because he was just working all the time. But it was cool to... a couple of times be back with him and just sit around, have a drink with him and talk about like what's going on in the country and like World Youth Day, like the stuff, just like normal random talk. I guess talk about the security. This was a little while after the couple attacks in Europe from ISIS. The very first thing the older boy said to us is like, do you guys feel safe? I'm like, yeah, I think we'll be all right. And then he like pulled out his Google Translate thing and like typed something in. He's like, oh, I am for sure there will be explosion. Like, dang. So that was our first day there. So it was interesting kind of going from that. And like also in the news that day, there was someone like on his way to Krakow who got busted with some minor explosives on him. So, kind of scary going into it, but I mean, obviously nothing happened. There were a ton of people there. Like, if something was going to happen, like, it could have, like, someone could have done something. But back to, like, our little host family, just more of, like, the hospitality that they're all talking about. Don't have any inspirational story like Donna and Jan, but but it was just cool to kind of hang out with, you know, like the normal everyday Polish person in their own home, and just share life with them, and hang out with the two kids. That was also fun. Just sit around watching a show with them and chatting about stuff and struggling through the language, but eventually getting there, especially just sitting down with the dad and talking with him about different things. But and also just good time for me and Adam to kind of, you know, bond, I guess. Bro time, yeah. So, yeah, that was our house.
So, the family that I was staying with, actually, their daughter, her name was Agnieszka, but for short, it was Agnes, so she was adorable. She's actually, like, straight in the back with the white shirt, if you can tell the difference. But, anyway, that was her. And I stayed with their family, and I actually stayed in her room. And to go back to the hospitality thing, like, just the people that I stayed with were just so sweet, and, like, they had a little bit of trouble, not as much as, like, Donna and Jan, like, talking with us, but it was adorable because I was staying with Katie and Aubrey, which are straight in the middle of the picture, but, and we would come home from, like, a long day or something, and they would ask us a little bit about how the day went, like, what we did, and if we couldn't talk to them that night, you know, we would have breakfast the next morning with them, and, for me, it was a little bit different because I didn't know Katie and, oh, it's Audrey, isn't it? I always called her Aubrey. It's just so close. But, and I didn't know them that well, and I was a little off during the trip with talking a lot, so I was just kind of, we would get home, I'd be really tired, so I just kind of, like, took time for myself to, like, do my Marian consecration and, like, just taking a lot of self-reflection, and it was just really nice just to kind of have that you time after being around millions of people and, like, just being with people all the time and just coming back from the day and being like, oh, so this happened today. This was good. But, yeah, just the family that I stayed with was wonderful. Like, little Agnieszka, like, would ride her bike up these huge steep hills every morning to walk us back to get to the bus station and then just ride back home. And then it was also really nice because the last day before we were headed back to the airport, I stayed with Donna and Jan so I didn't have to walk back early in the mornings because we had to leave at like 4 a.m. or something like that. And so I walk all the way back, which was like, I don't know if it was like 20 miles or however long it was. I think it's 20 minutes. Would have been a long day, but 20 minutes walk. And then it was some of the time, but so like 20 minutes there, 20 minutes back, and then however long it took to get to their place, and I get there, it was dark, I don't know the time, and little Donna had soup and tea ready for me already, like, already okay with having this extra person come along with them that, you know, she hadn't met along with them, but it was just like this sweet little couple and this little terrifying dog, but, yeah, but, yeah, just getting to see the aspect of, like, staying with a host family, because, you know, people do that all the time with study abroad, host families, but to kind of be in that place was just really interesting, but it was nice.
All right, I'm going to try to breeze through some of the less important stuff. What do you want this?
All right. My favorite part was staying with the family was cheesecake for breakfast.
The Polish people love cheesecake for breakfast. That was legit. And the tea. They had good tea. And we had hot dogs. So I'll try to breeze through some of this. We got to see a lot of really cool cathedrals there. World Youth Day, basically, they gave us a huge list of churches you have to see. And it was insane trying to get into any of them. So I was all like, dude, all these churches so close together, like, we can hit 5 in the morning. That's what I'm thinking mentally. No, we were lucky to get through one, if we did. So that was pretty insane. But this was Wawel Castle, and after we get through the lines at this castle, and it was St. Jadwiga was the cathedral there. We got to venerate some remains there. It was awesome. But so we're starving, and I get hangry, so I was like, roar. But we really wanted food, and so World Youth Day has all these tents set up for us to go get food. And we're like, okay, that looks good, because they've got, like, pizza and all these, like, different Polish dishes and whatever, and we're waiting, but Europe, unless you're in England, does not do lines. You fight. And so we, like, we're hoping to move, like, we're trying to press through these people, but it is packed solid. There's no way to even possibly. And so at the beginning of this, when we're looking, we're like, oh, the ready meal line is kind of short, and ready meals meaning these little cans of, think like a Chef Boyardee ravioli, like, like, but worse, these little cans of things, and we're like, no, we will not stoop that low, and the longer it's taking to move anywhere, which was not even 2 inches, the more we're like, maybe, and so finally, we're just like, screw it, we're hungry, and we just go over to go get this, these horrible little ready meals. It takes us still like a half an hour to get to the front, and we get this, like, Chinese food, and there's, like, tomato sauce on top. It was gross, and... It wasn't warm. They didn't warm it up. So it was rough, man, and I really value a good meal. So I was very sad. And so there's the sidewalk, and then there was, like, the basement entry into this building. So we walked down to, like, sit by this basement entry area, and you can see Luna slopping her thing there. So we're eating that. I'm kind of crying a little bit because I was really hungry, and I also have really, like, I'm kind of sensitive about what I eat. So, like, I'm trying to eat this, but I have a horrible gag reflex. So I'm, like, kind of like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to throw up. But so I'm trying to eat, and then I notice these white flakes coming down on me. I'm like, I kind of look up, I'm like, oh, must have just been the wind, and then tap, tap, and there's just a little bit more, and I just like, no, no, not right now, and so I like stand up and look, and of course someone is literally smoking up above me, tapping their cigarette right on me, and I'm just like, I think for a second, I'm like, well, can I yell at them, and I'm like, they're up there, I'm down here, I'm weak, and just like, there's no way, and I sit back down, and Luna's like, what were you doing, and I was like, someone's smoking above me, because I'm like, I don't want to tell Luna because she's gonna go all mama bear, of course, you know. And so, but I was like, someone's smoking on me right now. And she just stands up, she's like, excuse me. And I'm like, oh no. And she's like, my friend is sitting down here. I don't know if the person spoke English or not, but they got the hint. It was, so I don't know, that's like one of my favorite stories from the trip, because I mean, it can get kind of tense on trips, like we all had our moments where we're like, I hate each other, but in the end, like, we always come through for each other. So that was really funny. And so next we had the opening mass that night in a field, and I'll give that to Connor to talk about.
Yeah, so it was a really interesting opening mass. As you can see, we were wearing ponchos. It was, at the beginning, at least, just downpouring, raining. And so when we were first sitting on the floor, well, not the floor, but the grass, we were literally sitting in puddles, which was definitely something to offer up during the mass, be like, I'm here for you, but I'm cold. But, yeah, it was, the music was a little bit different, and it was kind of harder to hear so far back, but just being surrounded by so many people from mass and hearing the voices of, like, people from different countries. I don't know if it was this mass, but there was one time we were there and we were next to some German people that we made friends with that were just amazing. But I don't really remember that yet.
That's basically it. It was cool. There were 2 million people going to mass at the same time in a field, which was insane. That's basically what happened at the opening mass. And we were all in ponchos and soaking wet. And afterwards, we raced the German people back to the train station and we beat them. yeah. Yep, and Thomas was all like, that's how you win a war, and Luna's like, you can't say that here. But, yeah, so that happened. So let's see, oops, yeah, that's us there. You can see kind of the stage and everything and the more of that. So on Wednesday morning, we had this thing called a Pilgrimage of Mercy, and there are these two really big churches there. There's the John Paul II Shrine and the National Shrine of Divine Mercy. Global Shrine. It was huge. Anyway, it's, yeah, that's right. So it was a big church dedicated to Divine Mercy. And this was a great morning, too. I have all the angsty stories to tell you. So I took it upon myself to be navigator for the trip because I can navigate. And one of the girls we joined up with also felt like she was a navigator, so there was some tension, and a lot of tension. And that morning, we all out got into it because I was like, we need to be here at this time and, like, go this way. And she's just like, I'm going to do what I want. And so we're like, both of us are like, nope, and we're walking in opposite directions. And Luna's in the middle, and she's like, Kayla, get back here. And she's like, whatever her name was, get back here. And so I was very fragile that morning because I don't like being yelled at, and I was also mad because I'm right, and I was being prideful. So, yeah, it was one of those things. So they make us take this backwards way between the two churches, and it took us a half an hour in the 90 degree whatever heat, and it was a big hot mess. And the whole time I'm not talking to anyone because my pride is wounded, and I'm trying to just keep it together. We make it through the John Paul II shrine, which I'll let you guys talk about in a minute. And we do that, and I'm like trying to take it in and enjoy it, but I can't. And so in between the two churches after that, they had us pray a Divine Mercy Chaplet, and so finally I'm starting to calm down a little bit. And then we get into the National Shrine of Divine Mercy, and oh, where's the inside of it? Oh, yeah, duh, it's on this picture here. It looks kind of like an airport inside. It's not that pretty, but in the front, there's this huge image of Divine Mercy, and all around the altar, they have this space for us to kneel by. And so I go up, and I kneel, and right away, the Lord's just like, let it go, and I don't want to, and he's like, let it go. So I'm trying to let go of some of this stuff, and I just got this huge wave of peace because they've got this huge image of Divine Mercy, like the one we have in our church, and again, some of that reassurance that I was talking about before with being where the Lord was calling me to be washed back in again. And so something that really hit me over the course of this trip was the Lord's divine mercy. Something that I've really struggled with is seeing God as a loving father. And I've just never really been able to relate to God the Father very much. But I was reading a book that's kind of related to Unbound called Abba's Heart over the course of this and just delving into the Father's love during that time. And then to reflect on God's divine mercy, being in this place that's the birthplace of divine mercy, was really, really impactful for me. So it was a really tough morning, but it was really, really good, and the Lord opened my heart up for the rest of the trip in some ways. So then the other church was the John Paul II Shrine, which I will give to somebody to talk about. Connor.
Well, to start off, honestly, anything during the trip that was JP2 related, I don't know about Savannah, but made me really excited because our group on campus that we're a part of is named after John Paul II. So being able to know so much about him and then to see like where he, was this his church that like he first started?
No. The one that had his
Catholic. Oh, okay. Yeah. But obviously it was centered around JP2. And so we got to like make our way around the church, and it was a different kind of style church on the inside, but it was still just awesome, like, kind of, yeah, it was a lot of different murals, but I don't know, I could just kind of feel like him while I was there, and just, it was really cool being able to see something so focused on JP2.
So, like Connor said, well, you can even see it kind of in this picture, I guess, a little bit. The church was a lot different. It was kind of like a circle, I guess you could say. Like, we walked in, and then we would walk to the right and just kind of make our way around. And so we made it to, like, kind of the end of the church, I guess. And JP2's casket, is that how you say it? Casket? It was right there. And so he was shot, and that's what he was wearing. And I just find it, like, so inspiring and so beautiful because in his book, JP2's, like, Five Loves, he mentions how, like, while, like, during the shooting, like, there was two hands that, like, doing the shooting, I guess. One hand that pulled the trigger and one hand that guided the bullet. And it was literally, like, centimeters or whatever, like, from a major vein or artery. And I don't know, I just find that very, like, beautiful that he could have basically died, but he was able to find the beauty in it. So that was like really, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm this close. It's very cool. Very cool to see. Yep.
Okay, so this was a church that we were standing in line for to see the relics of St. Faustina and Divine Mercy image. And what was really cool is like when we actually got up to the church, there was actually, I don't know if they were sisters or, but they were just singing like "Here I Am" to worship and just a couple different songs. And and then like when we actually got up into the church, what you could do was we were in line to actually go up and kiss the relics of St. Faustina and then, you know, slowly make our way around the church and just like sitting there kind of like reveling in like, I just kissed the relics of a saint, like that's amazing. And I'm not really sure.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. We have to breeze through some of this anyway. So that works out really well. I'm going to breeze through this too. We got to see this Franciscan church, and there was a quiet adoration chapel. It was really nice to pray because I was like, because our friend Audrey had been studying abroad there for a month, and I was like, Audrey, is there anywhere we can go for some peace and quiet just to pray? And she's like, yeah, right, not during World Youth Day. And then we walk into this church, and it was quiet, and I was happy. And I also love the Franciscans, so that was cool. All right, so the next thing we got to do was the Night of Mercy.
So the arena that we were in for this was basically where catechesis for a lot of like English speakers were. We were in a different place, but this held most of the English speakers in Krakow. So they had this Night of Mercy that they were holding, that like there was going to be adoration. Bishop Barron, Robert Barron, was going to be talking during it. And then also Audrey Assad was going to be leading praise and worship. So it was something that we were like, yes, we have to go to. And we like got there hours earlier, and some of the people that like had scheduled catechesis there that were coming back actually didn't get in because there were so many people packed into this place. So we were just really like thankful that we got in here. And something that like I really wanted to take away from it is like when we were Bishop Barron had like talked about the victory of the cross, that like during the time of Jesus that a crucifixion was looked at as like the ultimate shame, like the ultimate, just look at something like that's pathetic and sad and just hopeless. And Bishop Barron really just like brought it home that like the crucifix is the ultimate victory, because Jesus took something of that time and made it powerful, made it worth like eternal life, made it hopeful. And pulling something like shifting that sort of paradigm is like really powerful. And so we were listening to this during adoration, and like actually a word that I've been like really coming back to a lot this year is victory and what Christ's victory means in my life. And so when he said that, it really just hit my heart, like, what does this mean again? Like, what is coming, like, what is my victory in your life? And Audrey Assad started to play songs, and there was a huge picture of the Divine Mercy. And again, like, that idea of victory and Divine Mercy just started coming to me. And it just was very powerful, because there's so many times that we feel weak, and we feel like we like could never get could never be holy enough, could never be good enough to be in the Lord's presence. And in that time of adoration, it was like the Lord was just like placing his hand over me and saying, you are good enough. Like, I will have victory over your life, and this is something that you don't have to be hopeless about. And like, I know like that was just a very powerful moment for me. And being there amongst so many other people from so many different English-speaking nations, and especially with Bishop Barron and Audrey Assad, it was just like, wow, this is World Youth Day, and this is, especially in the Year of Mercy, what the Lord has for his universal church and what he wants for us. So even though, especially like when we're talking about this, it's like, okay, we did this, and we did this, and we did this, and like, especially when we're doing that, it was very easy to get caught up like with what we're doing and like what's next. And so processing it in this kind of place, processing like what we were seeing and what we were doing, like it didn't all happen. Like there, I know there was a lot of processing afterward, but and a lot of the times when we're talking about this stuff, it's like, oh, this is what bad happened or anything like that. But having that sort of suffering and being able to like just combine it with the Lord's mercy and bring it to him, like, I think that was a big thing. And so if you hear us complaining, it was because we brought a lot to him. So sorry, we're kind of over talking, you guys, so we don't want to keep you here any farther than you need to be. So Thomas, catechesis or
no, we're welcoming
ceremony? Okay, so this was like one of, you know, the big moments. The Pope was coming through the different aisleways, and what were they? The Dominicans started making a human period.
pyramid. I'm sorry. To wave their flag up in the air, and then like just different groups started to form trying to get their flag to wave up in the air. And just something that just came to me that I remember with our group, there was this young girl that was trying to squeeze through the group to make it to the front to give this note to the Pope because her mom was sick. And I don't know if she ended up making it or not, but yeah. But it was so cool because he was, I think, a couple rows in front of us when we were in the field. And so, like, we were literally, I don't know, maybe to that wall away from him, if that. But, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Let's see what's next. Probably, do you want to talk about catechesis with Aquila? Or can we talk about
that? Okay, cool. So that's that field right there with all the rest of the 2 million people. And I'll let you talk about this quick.
So you can see in the picture, the banner on the left, it's Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. He was born in 1901. I died at like 24, I think. And he's blessed right now. And he lived an amazing life. So young, like look into it more when you have time, but he's really cool, really inspiring. But his body is incorrupt, so it hasn't decayed at all. And they brought him, he's Italian, they brought him, like, his body to Krakow for World Youth Day, and, like, set it out, and, like, we were able to go kneel and pray in front of, like, the body of a future saint. It was really cool. I don't know why they didn't have it, like, open, because it was just that box, like, it's kind of greenish. So, like, we didn't, like, look at him itself, but his body was in there, so it was cool to look at it. That little that verso l'alto, I don't even know how to say it, but it's like towards the top, which kind of like after his death became the, I don't know, kind of saying of his life, like everything. He wasn't like becoming a priest, or he didn't have this like amazing ministry. He was just like a real guy, normal guy with people, and shared life with people, and just did incarnational evangelization all the time. Like he'd go take guys out and climb mountains and whatnot. But, like, everything was kind of directed towards the top, like that little saying. So it was really cool being able to pray in front of him. Yeah, especially coming back to school and trying to, like, be a leader to guys also. It was cool to be able to pray in front of him for, you know, strength and whatnot for that. Yeah, says Bus Pierre Giorgio's body.
So I'll just show you some pictures of the next things instead of talking through them so we can spend some more time on the reflection stuff. This was the church where John Paul II was bishop, so we got to go there, got to go to confession there. That was cool. We also got to pray the Stations of the Cross that he prayed back every Friday when he was a bishop in Krakow. So these are the images that he used to pray with, and that was really, really powerful, I think, for most of us, just getting to pray through that. And after that, we all we all had to make it. So there's this field like outside of Krakow that we were going to have the final vigil night in, which is when everybody just goes and sleeps the night in this field. And we have a prayer vigil with the Pope that night and Mass the next morning. And it took us probably 2 hours to walk there from the final tram stop. So it was probably like a 3 to 4 hour travel time total. And then Thomas and Adam and a couple other people, it took them like 6 or 7 hours to get there. It was hot. It was insane. And we had to build a shelter for the evening. So I will let Luna talk about that for a little bit.
This is the main story I tell when I talk about World Youth Day, but I'm just going to keep it short because we only have so much time and I could really get into this. Well, so we had kind of set up, if you see on this side, we had kind of set up a little fort with our tarps. There had been like some sort of stage that was set up in like the corner of our section. And so we were like, hey, it's been raining all week. Guess what we want? Shelter. So we were like, hey, this is going to be a hot place. So we were sharing it with some very great Italians. They were like building their own like elaborate shelter. Exactly. It was a fortress. It was pretty impressive. And we were like, have you ever done this before? And they're like, oh, no, this is our first time. And we're like, oh, okay. So we had kind of set this up, but there was like a herd of like high schoolers that had come toward us. And and basically had jumped in our fort and said, "You must leave." And we were like, "Okay." So, and Kayla and Savannah were got off like finding our food packs at this point. And so me and Connor were just both looking at each other like, "Are we going to budge? Are we going to yell at these ladies?" And obviously from Kayla, like you'd heard, I was getting a little savage at this point. I was like, "Oh, do I really want to?" But we ended up just kind of packing up our stuff. And one girl had like looked at our tarp and said, "Did this come with us? Did this come under the fort?" And I'm like, "No, this is our tarp." So I was like, I was not having it with these ladies. And plus, as a college graduate being kicked out of a place where we would sleep by high schoolers, I was not happy. And plus, like, when they had finally got up to dance on the stage, which was what they were supposed to do, they were terrible. Like, me and Savannah could have choreographed something in, like, 2 seconds, and it would have been better. So I was just very, like, and what didn't help is when me and Connor started to set up our new fort, which you can see over here, we, like, the PW group that had went was coming over while I was just a hot mess and angry. So they were like, "Oh, how you doing?" I was like, "Terrible." So they were just like, "Oh, really?" But, you know, they obviously took our side on it and made fun of the Polish girls dancing like we did. Obviously Christian, but it's okay. We went to confession after the trip. It was okay. Basically, while, like, Savannah and Kayla had come back, and I was yapping with the PW people, the Italians had saw our plight, and they were pretty merciful towards us. They were like, "Do you need any help?" And basically, we were like, "Yes, please do something about this." And so they had built this fine fort out of our tarps, and we slept under there for the night. Oh, and Connor did. Sorry. Connor did a great job, but, like, these guys were pretty intense. Like, they were using our lanyards to, like, hook things to, like, the sticks, and, like, it was, yeah, they got buckets of sand to, like, hold those sticks up and the rocks, and I don't know. By the time I was done venting about it was done with, so I was pretty happy. obviously great again, but I will hand this over to... As you can see, there's a porter potty next to us, and it runs directly where Thomas was sleeping. So if you want to talk about that.
So that our new shelter there, we had brought 4 tarps on this thing. We had already burned one on that, the very first welcome night, that mass when it was raining really hard. So we burnt one there, so we had 3 left. So you can see, like, we started the fort on, like, that side, the right side, and then there's our tarp on the bottom, tarp on top, and then, like, so we had split up, and like me, Adam, and then the other 2 girls from school, we had split off and went into Krakow first and then came, and it took us like several hours longer to get there. So when we got there, like that right side was already built, and we just kind of put our last tarp on top. So the bottom is just those like ponchos with holes and whatnot in them. And we're right next to Porter John, which is like ideal, right? We want to be by that, like, super convenient. All you got to do is jump the fence there. But, like, thousands of other people thought the same thing. So, like, that line right there, that is, like, the shortest that line was all day. It was really bad because, like, you can see all those little rock things. That's, like, where all the water drains and goes other places. So it was, like, coming right down there if anything was happening. And, like, going into this.
Not yet.
But, like, going into this, I had heard horror stories from Adam Hoffman about other previous World Youth Day terrible Porter John experiences where they didn't have enough of them, so they all were overflowing. So that was in my mind going into this. And since we were the last ones there, we had me and – so Adam was there first, I guess. We got, like, the second last spot, but I got the last spot right on the outside. Right next to the Porter John. I could reach out and touch it, like, when I was sleeping. and so it's hard to see, but, like, right in front of the ambulance there, like, that very corner, that's, like, a row of, like, 30 Porter Johns, like, 30 yards away. But there was a fence there, so, like, no one could get to it except the people in that section. So everyone was going to this one and, like, just back to back to back. They weren't stopping. It's like I had to go once, so I thought I'd go and check the damage out, see how close we were. I had to wait like 45 minutes. There was no line at the other ones, but so I had to see what it was like, and it was getting up there, so it was getting scary. So like that was in my mind the whole time. At one point, like they put some police tape around it, but it was only there for like 5 minutes. And people, right back at it again. I'm pretty sure it was just supposed to be for like the people in the ambulance the whole time, but they didn't really make that clear. So we kind of went through it the whole time with that in the back of my mind. I was terrified going to sleep. Because it was, like, when I checked it, that was, like, several hours before, like, it was even dark yet. So, like, sleeping, it was, like, so hard. I couldn't even do it. I knew, like, stuff was going to be flowing out soon, and, like, I couldn't sleep. But, thankfully, at, like, 2 in the morning, they came and pumped that guy out. Loudest thing ever. Worst smelling thing ever. No one else heard it, but I was awake. So, like, I sat there just, like, smelling it and breathing it all in as it was getting cleared out. But so it was, like, it was probably the best moment, though, that it was, didn't have to worry about that anymore. So that was my experience with the Port-a-John.
I just want to note that me and Savannah slept through the whole Port-a-John emptying. We were just like, like we were out. But that was something that happened. So amidst all of this terror, I know we're just telling you, like, it's, I don't know, it was really like, it felt like caveman-like thing, like when you're like, you're out there camping with 2 million other people in these sections. So I promise the whole thing wasn't that horrible, but that's just where the funniest stories come from. So that was that part. But that night, so here's a view of a bunch of the people and all the ambulances that were running all night because everyone was getting heat stroke and trying to jump the fences to get to the porta potty. So that was fun. The last thing that happened that evening was a prayer vigil with Pope Francis, and we had adoration and there was praise and worship music, and it was really beautiful. And this was just as the sun was starting to set, and all of a sudden I see off in the distance that there's this glow, and we realized soon enough they're handing out 2 million candles to everyone, which was honestly the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, and also the greatest fire hazard ever. No, there was not a fire that night, at least that I know of. But it was a really beautiful moment because after, you know, we all just went to go get our candles and light them with each other for that time, and just to look out, and we illegally made our way up onto the stage part so that we could get a good lookout, and so just to look around and see those 2 to 5 million, depending on how many people were there, other Catholics our age, just coming together to worship the Lord and pray, and all of that light being lit. It was, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And after such a long and exhausting day of getting nasty sacks of food off the back of semi-trucks and fighting Polish dancers and all of this, like, craziness, just to be like, this is why I'm here. To pray and to be with these people, and it gave me chills nonstop for the rest of the evening as this time went on, to just sit there and pray with everyone. And I really don't know how to describe it other than that. Then it just, like, it felt like this is what World Youth Day is in that moment, and it made everything almost worth it, but actually worth it. So if everyone else, I think if we'll just go through and share maybe what the vigil and then kind of what we walked out with, then yeah, so I'll kind of and there, because the next thing we had was Mass and getting back, and that was chaos in itself. If you want to know more, ask us. So we'll leave this as the culminating point of World Youth Day, because then there was just the travel home. So for me, walking out of this, you know, I came in hoping for some healing and just reassurance into this idea of me. I just accepted the music ministry job here, and all of these questions I had, and I really just wanted reassurance and healing within the Catholic Church, and I think the Lord definitely gave me that, but not in the ways that I expected. My pride was broken down in a lot of ways over the course of this trip. I was exhausted and emotional, and everything was a huge challenge for me. I'd never felt as insecure probably as I felt during the course of that trip, because everything was new, everything was so out of control, and all the Lord just kept doing was bringing me back to His mercy. And it was really phenomenal that Pope Francis chose Krakow as the site for World Youth Day, because I think, especially in this year of mercy, I've never learned so much about God's mercy or felt it as deeply as I have in this time, and this whole experience was definitely an immersive form of learning about God's mercy, because I really needed it during that time. So that's something that I'm hoping to continue to grow in, but I definitely grew in love of the Father during that time and knowing the Father's love more deeply, so that's probably what I walked away with. So,
what I walked away with from this trip is just like getting to know the blessings and little things that happen in my life. So like I had mentioned earlier before, like I had been very desolate in my faith, and I really wanted that, like, that big experience that a lot of people get on retreats and stuff. And honestly, I didn't get that big experience. But after I came back and I, like, really focused on, you know, my 2 weeks in Europe, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this day, like, having Vladimir, like, help us, like, get onto another train, or just, like, just little things that were little blessings for us was really, like, a big point for me from this trip. And, like, I didn't mention it earlier, but I was also doing the Marian consecration, and something that I got from it was it had mentioned something like the suffering and the pain and everything that you're going through in this time of desolation. Like, it may seem like I'm getting further and further away from God, but it's only bringing me closer. Like, all these trials and everything I've been going through, it's like it's been the hardest couple months of my entire life. I'll be honest, it was just terrible. But I look back and I'm like, I have grown so much from this experience, and especially from World Youth Day. And like I said, like, it only brought me closer to God. And I didn't realize it during the trip, but afterwards, after I got home, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I grew so much from this trip, and I have grown so much in my faith from then. So I'm super thankful for this trip.
Like I said, what I was hoping to get out of the trip was kind of some direction in my life for, like, where God was calling me to be, like, whether it's career-wise, relationship-wise, like, what my purpose kind of was to be in the world, which is kind of, like, I don't know if that was, like, too much pressure on the trip or something, but, like, kind of like Savannah, I've been going through a big dryness in my faith for the past almost half a year, and I was kind of hoping to get some of that back during the trip, maybe some kind of a connection. And honestly, throughout the whole trip, I never really felt God there, but I could see how he was working. So the entire trip, I just had to continually offer up to him. It's just like, I know that the feeling isn't there, but I trust and I know that you are. And I just pray through this frustration that I just find the little blessings, and like knowing I'm over in Europe right now, being able to worship you, and kind of coming back from that, I would say it's made it a lot easier to fight through that, and like getting more hope that even though, like, if I never truly like feel his presence, like, I know that he's there, and I know that he is continually working in my life, and that, like, whatever it is that he's calling me to do, it's going to be good, because it's his will is good, because he showed me throughout that entire trip, like, that even at our worst moments where we're just like, we missed the train, we gotta sleep on some concrete in this shady little building or something, that everything's gonna work out okay. And yeah, I think that, like, overall after the trip, I was able to see a lot more of that than when I was actually on the trip, but it was still a huge blessing being able to be there.
So I guess for me, it was really cool being able to go to the Czech Republic. Is always a life goal of mine. I like to go to the Charles Bridge, go to the Prague Castle, and see my family over there. So got to check that one off. And then, like, World Youth Day itself, Krakow is like the Cooperstown of the Catholic Church. It's crazy how many, like, all-star saints are associated with that place. And to be able to be there and, like, hear the Pope talk, he talked a lot about, like, at the that vigil and the mass and the homily, he talked about, like, paralysis from fear, like, fear-causing paralysis. And that paralysis, like, being the root of so many things that are wrong, in the world right now, especially with young people. Talk about young people who, like, retire early at 20 due to that paralysis. And so having, like, that kind of call to arms in, like, a place like Krakow, where there's so much rich history of the church, like, we don't really have that here. You don't go and just say the Stations of the Cross where saints have said that before, really. So I mean, I learned a lot about like a lot of different saints, a lot about their lives. I was able to start that consecration and then finish it, obviously. So I finished the consecration to Mary, or to Jesus through Mary, and keeping that going. And then, I don't know, like a certain ownership in my faith, I think I got, being at a place where there were all these people who took that, you know, took that ownership of their faith and came back and did something with it. I think I got a certain type of ownership, you know, grasp it from looking at all those saints there, hearing the Pope talk, and then being with 2 million other people doing the same thing. Like the church that we don't really see here, but we know it's there. So I was able to see that actually and kind of, you know, bring that back and try to rid myself of some of the paralysis, I guess.
I think taking away from this trip, it's something that I, like Kayla, like I didn't expect. I definitely didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And throughout the trip, there's just like comfort zone taken out of that, obviously getting savage and just crazy and just being tested emotionally, physically, spiritually, like in a lot of different ways. But especially like at my point in life right now, like I had just graduated college. I was like moving in and hoping to find a job and be able to just go into this next phase of my life. And I think part of the reason like I went to is just kind of, or what I was looking forward to is being able to find answers and being able to see was where the Lord was guiding me. And a big part of it was just divine mercy that came in. It was the Lord just saying like, trust in me, give this faith to me because I will not disappoint. I will not let you down. And in a lot of the senses, like I was worried about like my job, like future job or anything like that. I was worried where I might be going and what he was asking of me. And so throughout that time, I think that, and especially coming back and getting hired at MHT and just also getting another part-time job, like throughout this last month and a half, like he has really delivered in his promises of saying like, I will take care of you and I will like point you on a great path. And so I think that like it's just come full circle in a certain sense for me, and especially being able to share it here, like I don't know, just being able to relive it and see what's really like how the Lord is working even now in all of our lives. It's really exciting, and it's exciting to see like what he can do for us. So I'd just like to thank you all. If anyone has any questions or anything, we'd love to take them afterward. But thanks so much for sitting with us for this hour and a half that we're just yammering. But we appreciate you all coming out and listening to us, and just as a community for supporting us, because all of us got here not only with all of our family support, but just the support of the Knights of Columbus, which we greatly appreciate, and just the support of the community and just kind of giving us ideas like this or just supporting us or asking us about it. So thank you and good night. No.